This is the Center for Strategic and International Studies Smart Women, Smart Power podcast. Welcome to the Smart Women, Smart Power podcast. I'm Beverly Kirk here at CSIS in Washington. Be sure to follow us on Twitter. You can find me at Beverly Kirk, and our Smart Women, Smart Power handle is at Smart Women. The 2018 Winter Olympics in South Korea are taking place against a backdrop of high tensions between the United States and North Korea and Pyongyang's recent diplomatic overtures toward Seoul. Joining me with more is Dr. Sumi Terry, Senior Fellow with the Korea Chair here at CSIS. And Sue, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me on.
So there were some South Korean and North Korean athletes. They trained together before the Olympics began. The countries agreed to march under a unified flag during the opening ceremonies and have a combined North and South Korean women's ice hockey team compete in the games. Can you talk a bit about what's going on here? And is this a real diplomatic effort to change the relationship between the countries?
Well, it depends on whether you ask North Koreans or the South Koreans. Of course, from the South Korean perspective, the Moon Jae-in administration would very much like this to be a real diplomatic breakthrough with the North. They want to be able to take this current thaw in inter-Korea relations and make a progress on the nuclear and missile front and at least get Washington or Pyongyang to dialogue and negotiation. But of course, for North Korea, their goals are different. And I think there are several goals for them. First, I think it's an opportunity that they see as a way to drive a wedge between the U.S. and South Korea, to create a fissure in the alliance. I think the North Koreans think the South Koreans, probably wrongly, but they see South Korea as the weakest link in this maximum pressure policy being applied to North Korea, and would like South Koreans to either relax sanctions or at least try to get Washington to alleviate this current pressure being applied to North Korea. And of course, their second goal is to sort of change this current narrative of North Korea being the ultimate outlier, this evil, barbaric regime that, you know, that they think the U.S. is trying to portray them as such. So they want to have this image makeover on the world stage with this very carefully vetted, hand-picked cheerleaders, hundreds of them coming and so on. And I think lastly, they see this as some sort of an insurance against future provocations and possibly U.S.'s response to those provocations.
Do you think it's going to work in the way that North Korea intends? Or I know that the Trump administration has put forth the message that we see through this, don't be fooled by the propaganda, in the words of some from the administration.
Right. From the Trump administration, we see exactly what North Korea is trying to do. And you saw, you know, President's State of Union address, where a lot of focus was on depravity of the Kim Jong-un regime, on human rights issue, inviting the North Korean defector to come and the family of Otto Warmbier. And you also see that Vice President Pence has invited Otto Warmbier's father to attend the Olympics and so on. So I think the U.S. is trying to counter this North Korea's propaganda effort, so North Korea's effort to counter. So there's a lot of this sort of counter messaging going back and forth. So I think from the U.S.'s perspective, they're trying to say, hey, we're not fooled here. We see exactly what you're trying to do.
And yet Vice President Pence has said that if there was an occasion for a meeting with North Korean officials, he'd be open to that. What do you make of it?
Well, sure. North Korea is sending as head of delegation Kim Jong-nam, who is the president, so-called president of North Korea, although, of course, he's not the real ruler. So there is an opportunity. But it's really up to North Korea. If North Korea wants to meet with Vice President Pence, and perhaps they could. But I don't think the vice president is asking for such a meeting. And I think he has made it clear that if he does sit down with the North Koreans or anybody, that our message, Washington's message, will be same, which is that North Korea has to be willing to talk about denuclearization and giving up their nuclear program.
You mentioned Kim Jong-nam being the leader of the North Korean delegation to the Olympics. Is there significance in the fact that he's the person who was sent?
I think so. It does mean that North Koreans want to elevate this into sort of like higher level. Kim Jong-nam is still, his title is the president of North Korea. So they could have sent somebody at lower rank, but they didn't. So they are trying to sort of elevate this Olympic outreach to something else. And we'll just have to see whether North Koreans will be willing to sit down with the United States and U.S. delegation headed by Vice President Pence.
And you mentioned the North Korean delegation. It's rather large. And the overtures to have the marching under the unified flag. How much of this is also an effort on the part of South Korea to try to keep the North Koreans from behaving badly or doing some type of provocation during the Olympics, thinking that if they're participating, they have less incentive to try to disrupt?
This is absolutely South Korea's number one priority right now. They do want to have successful, smooth Olympics without any provocations or missile tests or nuclear tests or any kind of crisis on the Korean Peninsula. So that I do think that was their number one reason why they even invited North Koreans to participate, because South Koreans' thinking is, as long as North Korea is actively participating in the Olympics, at least during this period, there should be no more provocations like missile tests and nuclear tests and so on.
And it's not actually the first time the Koreas have marched under the unified flag under during an Olympics. They did in Sydney in 2000, which I had a different job in 2000, and I was actually covering the Olympics in Sydney, so I remember that well. And they did so in Athens in 2004 and Turin in 2006. So this really isn't that uncommon, right?
No, it's not uncommon. As you just mentioned, they've already marched together three times. So you have to also remember, and since then, since 2006, North Korea all in all tested six nuclear weapons, including a hydrogen bomb test. That was obviously much more powerful than the one that was dropped on Hiroshima. They did three intercontinental ballistic missile tests, dozens and dozens of missile tests. So again, yes, this is not unusual that they march together, but that also does not mean that there is a progress being made on the nuclear missile front. All of their nuclear missile tests came after the marching of the North Koreans and South Korean Olympians.
So there are some who are hoping that since the U.S. and South Korea agreed to put a freeze in air quotes on their military exercises that they normally do until the Olympics are over, there are some who hope that that will be extended permanently, and perhaps in exchange, North Korea will stop its missile testing. Do you think that's realistic? I can't imagine the Trump administration agreeing to freeze those military exercises.
No, I think from U.S.'s perspective, the freeze for freeze does not make any sense for us. Also, what we are asking North Koreans to do is their tests are in violation of United Nations Security Council resolutions. Our joint exercises are all about readiness. And so the exercises are needed. U.S. soldiers often serve about 9 months when they're in South Korea. And South Korean soldiers serve about 2 years at a time. North Korean soldiers are serving like 10 years each time. So this is a readiness issue against North Korea's threats and provocations. So I do not see the Trump administration agreeing to a freeze for freeze. Maybe we'll scale down the joint exercises, but it's not going to be, I think, just complete moment of the joint exercises.
And what's been the response in the wider region to not only the freeze, at least through the Olympics, but also the charm offensive and the diplomatic overtures? How are other countries in the region responding?
I think it depends on which country. I think China, Russia, and obviously are relieved. At least this is lessening of tensions. Well, we were just continually escalating tensions throughout 2017, so I think people welcome this current thaw. I do think the United States and Japan are also key ally in the region, are more skeptical of the North Korean intention. So while they're welcoming this current thaw, they don't see it as that leading to anything dramatic in terms of making a progress in the nuclear missile front. So I think there's much more skepticism from, let's say, the United States and Japan.
What's the reaction amongst the South Korean populace to the unity and everything else that's being done right now? Is there support for President Moon and his efforts to engage?
Yes, I think actually the South Korean public's reaction to this whole Olympic thing was is very interesting to me, because broadly speaking, the South Korean public does favor engagement and dialogue. But we've seen a sort of domestic backlash against the Moon Jae-in administration,
really?
Not only coming from the conservatives, but from the younger generation who didn't really like this idea of North Korea hijacking the Olympics. They really didn't like this kind of the joint female hockey team. They thought this was very unfair. Why do South Korean, you know, athletes have to work so hard, and some of these hockey players cannot participate because we have to now allow these North Korean hockey players to participate? So they thought this was an unfairness. This was unfair. This was had to do with fairness issue. So President Moon's popularity dropped by some 8 percentage points over this whole thing. So it's a complicated issue. The public broadly supports engagement, yet I think the Moon administration has to be careful not to make overly dramatic unilateral concessions to North Korea. I don't think there's an appetite for that.
I want to remind our listeners that you are listening to the Smart Women, Smart Power podcast. I'm Beverly Kirk, and my guest is Dr. Sumi Terry. She's a senior fellow here in the Korea chair at CSIS, and we're, of course, talking about the Olympics and Korea politics. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at Smart Women. You can follow Sue at Sumi Terry, and let me spell that for you, Sumiterry. You are very active on Twitter.
Well, not overly active, but I do have a Twitter account, and I try to tweet as much as I can.
As much as you can. I do want to ask about what you think this whole Olympic effort will do in terms of applying pressure on Kim Jong-un in North Korea to continue after the games are over. Or do you think there will be any pressure on him at all to change his behavior after the games are over?
Yes, I think this maximum pressure policy will continue. I think the sanctions effort will continue. That was very clear by President Trump in his State of Union address. It was very clear when he invited 8 defectors to the Oval Office that week, the same week that he gave the State of the Union address. It's also clear by President Pence traveling with Otto Warmbier's father. So clearly, we are all about maximum pressure, applying this pressure on the North Korean regime, and I don't think we are going to take a break from doing that.
And do you think anything changes, or do you go back to the provocations and the missile tests and everything that happened before the Olympics? Do you think that, okay, there's this pause for the month of February, and after that's over, it's back to... Yeah. Back to your corner, right, so to speak.
I think the ball really is on Kim Jong-un's court, and it's interesting to see what would happen. On one hand, I think Kim Jong-un could not test over the summer, even if joint military exercises resume. North Koreans have said now that they have completed their program. In their New Year's address, they've said they've completed their program. I think Kim Jong-un is also quite nervous about this talk coming out of Washington of limited military strike, bloody nose, and so on. So what North Koreans could do is take a pause from testing. Now, that does not mean North Korea is not going to continue in terms of improving and working on the nuclear program. And that could take us until maybe the fall of this year, where there are some significant dates coming up in September and October. I think it remains to be seen when North Korea will resume the provocations once the joint exercises resume, late March, early April, or will they take a pause while they improve on their capability?
And what do you foresee with South Korea? Do you foresee President Moon making an attempt to continue the diplomatic efforts that have been started?
I think the Moon administration will definitely try to do that. The problem is, unless they make concessions, which North Korea will demand, North Koreans will demand sanctions relief. They might demand the reopening of the Joint Gaesong Industrial Complex. They will demand that we postpone the joint military exercises indefinitely or cancel them completely. So if the Moon administration is not going to make those concessions, then it's where are we going to be? Then the North Koreans will get upset and frustrated, so we'll be back to where we were in terms of this kind of diplomatic effort just falling apart.
All right. Well, this is a fascinating conversation that I'm sure we will continue over the next months. And I'm sure this is a conversation that is to be continued, and it will be very interesting to watch as the games unfold to see what the political, for lack of a better term, dance steps are between each of these governments, South Korea, North Korea, and the U.S.
Yes, absolutely right. But let's just now hope for successful Olympics. South Koreans have worked really, really hard to put this Olympics together. So let's just hope for at least successful Olympics for now. Let's welcome the thawing of tension for now, and then we'll just resume and see what happens when the Olympics and Paralympics are over.
Dr. Sumi Terry, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me on.
And thank you for joining us. Remember to follow us on Twitter. I'm at Beverly Kirk. We're at Smart Women. And follow Dr. Sumi Terry at Sumi Terry. Thanks for being here. Thank you for listening. For more information, go to csis.org and subscribe to our podcasts.